Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. There's a renewed push for the New York HEAT Act at the state capitol at a time when Governor Kathy Hochul and legislative leaders are focusing on affordability in the state. The HEAT Act would place a cap on energy bills for low-income New Yorkers. This year, the bill has been reintroduced in the legislature with a new assembly sponsor, Assemblymember Joanne Simon. Elise Klein with the New York Public News Network takes a closer look at the support for the bill this year.
The New York HEAT Act, the New York Home Energy Affordable Transition Act, for many advocates is a labor of love. For several years, environmentalists traveled to the Capitol to lobby for legislation that would essentially end ratepayer subsidies to build out more gas lines and curb utility costs. For some advocates, this legislation would mean less financial stress. David Alexis lives in Brooklyn with his wife and two daughters, where he says he often has to choose between paying energy bills and paying rent or health insurance bills.
It just gets to be too much alike. And it just puts another level of burden on our family.
Alexis says they are several months behind on their energy bills. He doesn't just worry about their financial well-being, but their physical well-being as well. He says both of his daughters have asthma and his wife has sickle cell anemia.
Making sure that the heat is on, especially in the winter, is crucial because not having that extra heat can cause anyone to go into the hospital, whether through an asthma attack or a sickle cell crisis.
Alexis says hospital visits then add to their debt stress and emphasizes this stress is something many New York families feel.
Utilities bills are too damn high, and they continue to get higher every single month. Like, we're seeing the prices continue to go up, and it's unbearable. And unless we do something about it, this is going to continue to happen.
Liz Moran, an advocate with Earth Justice, says the New York HEAT Act has a strong swell of support.
It makes sense. Utility bills, year after year, keep rising for New Yorkers. And it's not like services changed. They're relying on the same gas system.
The New York HEAT Act would help address affordability by capping utility costs for low to moderate income customers at no more than 6% of their household incomes. It would also end what is known as the 100-foot rule, a cross-subsidy that allows new residential ratepayers to avoid paying for the cost of a new gas line if they live within 100 feet of an existing one. The problem is that for all other ratepayers, prices are higher. Moran estimates this rule costs ratepayers altogether millions of dollars.
By eliminating that subsidy, that's going to put money back in people's wallets.
The legislation would also help the state transition away from gas systems by requiring the Public Service Commission to develop a plan to do so. Moran says this transition, in addition to the affordability aspects of the bill, will save New Yorkers over $100 per month on average.
Gas is very expensive. The infrastructure associated with gas, pipelines, and it's actually those costs that are making people's bills go up.
Moran adds the New York HEAT Act will allow the state to plan better and give people options that may be cheaper for them when they're available. Some environmental experts say it's also crucial for the state to move away from gas heating because of climate change. Robert Howarth, a professor of ecology and environmental biology at Cornell, says it's imperative to transition from fossil fuel heating to sustainable forms of energy, not just for the environment, but also for public health.
The scientific community of the world is near unanimous in saying we need to move away from fossil fuels to a decarbonized energy future, and we need to do so quite quickly.
Howard says New York has one of the largest economies in the world, and being able to successfully implement sustainable energy here could inspire other states to do so as well.
New York can set an example, demonstrate that it can be done in a cost-effective way that's good for consumers, good for our citizens, and in so doing, lead the way for the rest of the world.
The legislation has strong support among Democrats, many of whom are equally concerned about climate change impact. State Senator Patricia Fahey, a Democrat representing parts of the Capital Region, says at a time with another Trump administration in charge, the state needs to be a leader.
We have to show leadership despite the backwards-looking approach that the Trump administration is taking now. So I'm hoping that even if we start on pieces of this, we can break this down to really make sure we are addressing some of the most immediate needs, because the cost of doing nothing is in the tens of billions every year with these weather-related disasters.
Fahey says part of the bill, an important part, is the 100-foot rule, which would stop building out more gas infrastructure.
Let's stop perpetuating the problem. Let's address this 100-foot rule so that we're not automatically doing gas hookups. And let's invest in the future, meaning solar, wind, and other related alternative fuels.
Other Democrats agree the 100-foot rule, which is part of the state's obligation to serve law, requiring utilities be provided to customers living within 100 feet of an existing line, is a crucial part of the bill. Assemblymember Anna Kellis, a Democrat representing parts of Tompkins and Cortland counties, says as lawmakers consider this bill again this session, they will have to protect this piece of it.
This is saying we have to expand what type of power is delivered. So instead, this says you have an obligation to serve power. It just doesn't need to be gas. That needs to stay. And I think that that's really important because sometimes you have situations where it might be that all electric is what is cost effective for that house.
While the legislation has significant support, it also has quite a bit of pushback. Republicans express concerns about affordability and the state's ability to handle a transition to sustainable heat systems. Assemblymember Ed Raw, a Republican representing Nassau County and a ranking member of the Ways and Means Committee, says the Republican conference has tremendous concerns.
We always come back to affordability and reliability when it comes to some of these energy goals. We want to get greener, but we can't have blinders on about it. So my concern is that we're not ready for so many of these things, and that's going to increase costs on our consumers.
Ross says he is concerned capping costs for some customers, low to middle income, means costs could go up for other customers. Other Republican lawmakers like Assemblymember Mary Beth Walsh, who represents parts of Saratoga, Schenectady, and Fulton counties, agree, saying this bill would limit consumers and ultimately drive up costs for at least some consumers.
Part of what gets me is that right in the title of the HEAT Act, the A in HEAT stands for affordability, and I just think that this is going to have the exact opposite result because it's going to take away some consumer choice. I think it's a gas ban just under a different way of getting to it.
Some Democrats say Republicans' opposition is politically driven.
And I hope that we've come to a place where we recognize that we have to focus on what is good for all of our constituents and what is affordable. And a lot of that has been worked out through the negotiations that have happened, including some of the utilities that now support the piece of legislation. That's a huge win. So hopefully we can get on the same page this year.
Other Democrats agree. State Senator Liz Krueger, a Democrat representing parts of the Upper East Side in Manhattan and the lead sponsor of the bill for several years now in the Senate, says the arguments from Republicans are tired. The bill has failed to pass in both houses for several years. However, last year it was very close. It passed the Senate for the second time and was close to getting to the floor for a vote in the Assembly. Lawmakers in support of the bill say they simply ran out of time in the Assembly. Kella says this year, however, the bill has a better chance of moving given that much of the negotiations around the bill language with stakeholders like gas companies has already been sorted out.
That's an advantage now because a lot of that coordination has happened and the language has been amended to reflect those negotiations. That's an advantage. We're going to start there.
Last year, the New York HEAT Act was also part of budget conversations. There was a greater push for it to end up in the budget, given that the governor included some key provisions of the bill, such as eliminating the 100-foot rule, in her proposal. While many lawmakers and advocates want this legislation to be a part of the budget discussions again, some lawmakers are skeptical.
I think there's so much else right now. This may be, it's not clear if this will be in the budget. Last year, it was a budget conversation because it was in the governor's budget. Part of it, a small part of it was. This year, I think it's going to have to be, it probably have to be separate. But again, those are, that's a decision that has not been made.
Some Democrats agree, saying there is limited time and lawmakers are also under enormous pressure from risks associated with the federal government and potential cuts to programs the state relies on. However, some Democrats say it could end up in budget talks if it's in just one of the chamber's One House budget resolutions. And if it does end up in budget conversations, many Republicans won't be happy. State Senator Anthony Palumbo, a Republican representing parts of Suffolk County, says this legislation is too complicated to sort out in the budget.
Bottom line, this is way too complex to be in the budget. I think that some advocates may want that to happen. I think that's a terrible idea.
Other Republicans agree. State Senator George Borrello, a Republican representing parts of the Finger Lakes who has voted against this bill previously, says he is against policy in the budget.
If you need any proof this is a bad bill, they're trying to force it into the budget bill so that they can suppress discussion and debate. This is what they do with all the bad legislation that they pass that they know the majority of New Yorkers are opposed to.
Some Democrats disagree. Assemblymember Joanne Simon, a Democrat representing parts of Brooklyn and the new assembly bill sponsor, argues the budget itself is complex.
Number one, the budget has never been known for being a paragon of clarity, right? I mean, it's always a complicated budget language in many respects. The other thing is that the revisions make it much more clear. So where people may have had questions before, it's much clearer in the bill what would actually happen.
Simon also stresses this bill has a great deal of support.
And it's very popular. I mean, this is one of those bills that enjoys a great deal of popularity around the state.
The bill has been recently reintroduced in the Senate and in the Assembly. The bill has changed slightly since last year. Senator Krueger says the new bill version created explicit protection for gas customers and transitioning customers, addressing concerns that some customers who didn't have an alternative energy option would be left without energy. Simon says the bill has many guardrails to protect consumers. She also highlights there will be opportunities for public comment through the implementation of this legislation as utilities work on a transition plan.
I think that the previous complexity is a little more clarified now. And I think there are always things people misunderstand. And I think it's very clear because we have built in so much responsiveness to the public in the process under which this would go. So it's not going to happen overnight, right? Nobody will be left without heat.
Krueger says she is confident the legislation will pass again in the Senate. Meanwhile, Simon says she is cautiously optimistic given all the work that has been put into the bill so far.
At this stage of the game, confidence is something that is, always couched with a little healthy skepticism. I'm sure there will be questions that we need to answer. There will be some other maybe noodling with the bill in some respect. But I feel very positive about the changes that have been made thus far with the bill that answer a lot of those concerns. And so I think we're starting from a better place.
Budget conversations will continue for the next few months as lawmakers wrap up hearings, propose their resolutions, and negotiate with the governor. Whether or not this bill will be a part of that remains to be seen. But one thing is certain. Lawmakers and advocates will continue to rally for the New York HEAT Act, even if they have to do so after the budget is signed into law. In Albany, I'm Elise Klein for the New York Public News Network.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with Natasha Pernicka. She's the executive director of the Alliance for a Hunger-Free New York and the food pantries of the Capital Region. I began by asking Natasha about the fact that hunger is a growing problem across the country and in the state.
Yeah, it's not business as usual in the food pantry system. Quite frankly, it's getting more and more serious as we go on. What we're seeing across the country is that 80% of American households are living paycheck to paycheck. That means they're just one emergency away from not having any resources. We can also look at it for United Way has an Alice report called Asset Limited Income Constrained Employees. It documents what percent of households are living in poverty, but then what percent of households are people working, but their jobs are not paying enough to get their basic needs met. Across the country, there's about 42% of households that are considered Alice or below. Here in New York State, we're even higher. 46% of households don't have enough resources to make ends meet. If you look at it from food insecurity, that means not everybody has enough resources for or access to healthy food for an active and productive life. We've seen from the USDA statistics from 2023, we had 13.5% of households across the U.S. were food insecure, up from 12.8%, which is significant from a statistical point of view. What that translates here in New York is that one in eight households don't always have enough food to put on the table every day.
And the point is, I think, the basis of all this, the philosophy that I think, I don't know how anybody could disagree with it, quite frankly, is that people have a basic right to food.
There's a blog that I read, and it's called Who Deserves to Eat? That's what it comes down to. Who deserves to eat? It's just inherent that all people need to have access to healthy food in order to thrive and have a productive life. In fact, at this point in our society, what is the role of government in the fight against hunger? What is the role of charity in the fight against hunger? Because at this point, when you have one in eight households struggling to put food on the table, this significantly impacts their pursuit to happiness, their pursuit to have a successful life.
Yeah, and that is a ripple effect through the family system, right? Because you've told us in the past that when it comes to feeding your children, most parents are going to go hungry in order to give their kids food.
Yeah, we've done surveys and parents skip meals so that their kids can have food. We know that if adults don't have enough food to eat, that can impact their work performance or their ability to do their job. We know that not having enough food to eat is in relation to chronic health conditions, diabetes, heart disease, hypertension, high blood pressure. If we don't have enough healthy food, we aren't going to be healthy and we're not going to be able to be a part of our community in the way that we want to.
Yeah. And to that end, you know, the recent State of the State address, that's an annual address given by the governor where she lays out her proposals. But there was also every year this side by side People's State of the State address. And I believe your issues were certainly there at that.
Actually, the Alliance for a Hunger Free New York runs the People's State of the State. We carry on the Hunger Action Network tradition of the People's State of the State. And one of the things we really focused on, you know, this year was a wonderful year in that the governor's budget incorporated the legislative ad plus the base budget for the Hunger Prevention Nutrition Assistance Program and Nourish New York, which are the two main funding for the food pantry and food bank system that state funding here in our state. So we were pleased that the governor and her administration said, okay, we need to at least maintain the funding that went out the year prior. However, when we did an analysis, you know, we're asking for $75 million for when we did an analysis that took into consideration where philanthropy funds are at, the increase in food assistance service levels, which are up 70% since 2019, taking into consideration that food inflation is up 25% since 2019. So when we did the analysis, it would take $82 million just to remain flat. We're asking for 75. Right now, the governor has it at 57 million. So we appreciate them trying to maintain. But if anything, we need to be doing more right now.
That's Natasha Pernicka, Executive Director of the Alliance for a Hunger-Free New York. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York Governor Kathy Hochul wants to waive tuition and fees for adult learners enrolled in high-demand community college programs like nursing, manufacturing, and engineering. If lawmakers greenlight the idea, Hochul says the state will become a larger hub for tech companies and see fewer staff shortages in important industries. Jiang Yun Han from the New York Public News Network reports.
Yedi Della Rosa is everything her patient would want in a nurse. Gentle, patient, and thorough.
Let's just take a deep breath in through your mouth and out through your mouth, okay?
It's just that the patient is not actually real. It's a mannequin, and Della Rosa is a student. She's standing in a room that looks exactly like a hospital room, with a mannequin lying in a medical bed, hooked up to a heart monitor and oxygen tank. It's the first nursing clinic class of the semester at Hudson Valley Community College. De La Rosa's waiting for the day she becomes a licensed nurse, so she can swap out mannequins for real patients. It's been a long time coming for her.
When I made the decision to go into the nursing field, I had to really figure out, you know, where my priorities are, how I'm going to be able to make it.
De La Rosa says she always loved the industry, but put off nursing school because she couldn't pay for school with all of her family's bills. But seeing medical workers deal with staff shortages during the height of the pandemic moved her so much, she knew she wanted to serve patients too. So she enrolled in the nursing program last fall.
You know, I held on for dear life, and I'm like, well, if this is the path for me, you know, I know I'm going to do it somehow.
And Governor Kathy Hochul has an idea for how to make that path a bit easier.
We will pick up the tab for you because that is an investment that will earn multiple times over.
That was Hochul at a news conference in January. She wants to cover books and tuition for adult learners getting associate's degrees in programs like nursing, teaching, engineering, tech, and manufacturing starting in the 2025 to 2026 school year. About 1 in 4 students across all programs in the state's community colleges are adult learners. If the proposal passes in this year's state budget, the effects would be widespread.
We're talking about thousands of students across the state.
That's John King. He's the chancellor of the State University of New York system.
This will be the ticket for adult learners who maybe have been struggling at their job, they're not making enough, they're trying to figure out what they want to do, they're really interested in technology. This could be the ticket for them to walk into a job that is well paid in the technology industry.
But not everyone will be on Hochul's tab, including Jen Crawford. The governor's plan is geared toward people without degrees, but Crawford has 2 in art. She's an artist and a former teacher, but says she's always been interested in STEM.
So I've always kind of had this back and forth with trying to decide between engineering and art and math.
Crawford says her job teaching art in a public school wasn't enough to cover her bills. So she left the field and enrolled in an optics program at Monroe Community College just outside of Rochester. She's been learning the art of designing lenses of all kinds, like the ones in NASA telescopes and cell phones. She made her first lens last semester.
It was so fun. I mean, it really actually reminded me of art school.
Optics is on Hochul's list of high-demand degrees that would be covered, but because Crawford has a bachelor's and master's already, she doesn't qualify for the program. Crawford says it would make sense to expand the program to people like her who have degrees that they feel just don't serve them anymore. But in the meantime, she's going to look for other scholarships.
Because my tuition's on my credit card.
In Albany, I'm Jung Yoon Han for the New York Public News Network.
Responding to increasing requests for emergency assistance during the winter cold, the National Grid Foundation has awarded Catholic Charities 2 grants to help those in need. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
2 National Grid Foundation grants totaling over $500,000 will go to help warm households served by Catholic Charities of the Diocese of Albany, which spans 14 counties. Sister Betsy Van Dusen is Catholic Charities CEO.
Inflation's driving up the cost of food and oil and gas, and our neighbors and some of us in this room are struggling to keep our homes warm and our lights on. 60% of the households we served were in our rural communities, the other 40 in suburban and urban, proving that financial assistance and financial hardship has no boundaries. This $550,000 grant will provide a vital lifeline for those facing desperate circumstances.
Announcing the funding Wednesday, Van Dusen says difficult times don't discriminate, and points out that demand for emergency energy assistance is rising. She says support from the National Grid Foundation over the past 17 years has enabled Catholic Charities to increase the number of families and individuals it helps.
The need is growing at an alarming rate. Since 2021, we've nearly doubled the number of households we've helped. Not only are we serving more households, but we are also providing larger monetary help for those rising emergency energy costs.
Van Dusen notes that Catholic Charities served 621 households in 2023. In 2024, that number increased by 33%. Rising fuel and electricity costs pushed the average assistance grant per household from $463 in 2021 to $548 in 2024. Don and Bev Pierce, an older Delaware County couple, were recently left without heat when their oil tank sprang a leak. Shirley Pierce is their adult daughter.
Myself and my brother, and we got families and we've got things going on, and we were trying to figure out a way that we could, you know, help them. And I have a friend of mine, a friend of our family, Tracy Martindale, who works at Catholic Charities in Oneonta. And I reached out to her, got right back with me, and has filled out some paperwork and submitted that.
Martindale helped the Pierces secure a new heating system for the home they've lived in the past 68 years. National Grid Foundation Executive Director Robert Simmons says the door is open if additional help is needed.
This won't be our last collaboration between the National Grid Foundation and the Albany community. I'm here to say that we're building on a legacy of those that came before me, but we're also standing on the shoulders of those in the Catholic tradition who have fought for justice and against poverty and fought for anti-poverty movements as a part of the culture of the Catholic Church. Catholic priests standing outside in my neighborhood passing out food. Jesuits passing out Bibles. Jesuits passing out clothes. This is the core principle of Catholicism. We stand in solidarity with all those of faith, all those who are outside of the faith community, to work together to improve Albany for the betterment of all people.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2509. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York state government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.